everybody, and welcome to the first edition of TTM Cast. This is a podcast for TTM autograph collectors. This is the rookie edition, if you will, the first venue into podcasting for myself. I'm a newbie at this, so please bear with me. I am not a professional broadcaster. I am not a professional entertainer. I am just a passionate TTM collector like yourself. I've been collecting TTMs for about a year and a half now. Prior to that, I collected a little in the 70s, but I really ramped up in the past year, getting over 700 returns, so I've become a passionate collector of TTMs. Why am I hosting a podcast? Why have I started this podcast? Quite simply, I love to talk about TTMs, but my kids and my wife's eyes glaze over any time I talk about TTMs. So I said, okay, if I can't talk about TTM and my passion for TTMs with them, I am going to talk to you, my fellow collectors. So that's why I started this podcast, TTM Cast. My goal of this podcast is to have interviews with people that are in the industry, collectors like yourself, as well as athletes, and get their feedback and feelings on TTM and their experiences of receiving TTM's requests. So this is my first foray into podcasting, so please bear with me. I welcome your suggestions, and let's start off with a little segment that I like to call Baker's Dozen. What's that? That's basically a brain dump for me for what's been happening for the last week or so in regards to TTM and TTM collecting. This is a real opportunity for me to talk about some things that I have noticed in TTM that I thought interesting that I'd like to share with you. So let's start off with Baker's Dozen. The first thing that's really been bothering me lately is I've been sending out requests and I get my returns back, but the athlete takes my top loader. So I get a card with no sleeve. Sometimes they get damaged in the mail. Sometimes they get wet because of the weather. I really miss my sleeve. So I'm really upset when I get a return with no sleeve. So that one thing that really has been bothering me lately. The other thing that's been bothering me lately is getting cards that aren't mine. I have been sending out a lot of requests and getting cards back that are not mine. Sometimes it's good. I get bonus cards that I didn't have that I said, oh, that's a nice card. I never had that, but I never sent it out. Other times, because I'm collecting a 1978 top set autographed, I get cards back that aren't mine that aren't my 78 sets, card sets. So that's really disconcerting to me. So that's another thing that's been bothering me lately. Another thing that I noticed that was a little tidbit that I saw on Tom Owens' Baseball by the Letters. It was a suggestion from Mike Caldwell, who was a pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers, and he mentioned that people are sending him envelopes that aren't the pre-sealed envelopes, and that he's getting tired of licking and sealing the envelopes himself. And I thought that was a good suggestion. I know I've always sent out pre-sealed envelopes, but that's something that you might want to consider when you're sending out to athletes or to people, and consider that really they don't really want to sit there and lick your envelope before they send it out. So you might want to send out a pre-sealed envelope. A couple things that I'd like to point out that I'm really a fan of is there are three kinds of sites that I use to get athletes' addresses and signing autographs. So I figured I'd share that with you. I'm sure a lot of people in the hobby know about it, but if you're a newbie, these are three really good sites to find addresses and to find out who's signing. I recommend sportscardform.com. Excuse my Bostonian accent. Sometimes I drop the R's. So once again, it's sportscardform.com. Also, sportscollectors.net, which is a great site, and fanmail.biz, which is a great site for celebrity autographs. So those are the three sites that you might want to check out if you're not using them right now. They are all fantastic in terms of recent returns. They're all fantastic in terms of addresses, and all three of them don't cost a penny to go and become a member of or to look at all the information. So I recommend those three. a couple other things, tidbits that I'd like to share with you. I want to send a shout out to RZ TTM, who is collecting 1992 NFL Game Day cards autographed. He's collecting the set. I wasn't really familiar with these cards before. Saw them on some of his posts on Instagram recently, and I think they're fantastic looking cards. They're a little bigger than a regular card, but RZTTM has submitted, I think, 16 so far towards collecting a set, and I think it's a great different type of card that people are signing, and I think it's a fantastic looking card. Lastly, there's a nice show coming up locally here in the Northeast in Coventry, Rhode Island at the Coventry High School, February 2nd and 3rd, which is a Saturday and Sunday of Super Bowl weekend. They're supposed to have a bunch of hockey guests and some boxing guests. They haven't put out their signing guests yet, but it's a pretty big show, I guess, in Rhode Island. They have about 90 tables, so if you're in the air and you want to go do something, do the Saturday before Super Bowl, I would recommend going to Coventry, Rhode Island, and the Coventry High School. It's about, I don't know, an hour and 15 minutes from Boston. Where I'm located, north of Boston, so if you're in the Northeast, check it out. Well, I want to cover some of the returns I've gotten so far in January. We've had a pretty good month so far. It's only January 11th today, and I've gotten a bunch of cards returned so far. I am collecting the 1978 Topps baseball set autograph. I have almost 200 now. I've been doing that for about 3 months, so it's going well. I've been sending out between 20 and 30 a week. And I've got some other sports people in terms of autograph pictures that I got back. So I'll run down a list of returns that I've gotten since the beginning of the new year. I got a nice picture from Michael Ruzioni, who was the Olympic gold medal hero from the Russian game in 1980. I also got a nice personalized photo from Jim Craig, the goalie from that team. And I got a nice personalized photo from Phil Mickelson, the golfer, the lefty. He took a couple months to get back to me, but that was a nice return. The Craig and the Ruzioni came back really quickly. Some of the cards that I've gotten this month so far, I got Jeff Newman, Don Ossie, Steve Kemp, Jeff Zahn, Bert Campanaris, Don Kessinger, Skip Lockwood, Steve Renko, Adrian Devine, Doug Rader, Gary Thompson, John Stearns, Buddy Schultz, John Vernhoven, Phil Mankowski, Ike Hampton, and Jose Morales, all from my 1978 set. So I was very pleased to get those back. In addition, I got a Mike Mussina rookie card, which I was very happy to get back. Mike Smithson from the Red Sox. I also got Dave Collins from the Boston Celtics back after about a year. That one took a while, but I was shocked to get that back, and I was very happy. I got a Marcus Mariota that I sent out in September. Just a Panini card from this year that I got him signed. I was very happy about that. About a month ago, I bought a box of 1988 Flares. And I opened all the packs, and I got a couple of those back that I sent out. I got Dan Pasqua. I also got a Matt Young and a Mike Easler. So very pleased about that. As I said, it's been a pretty good month in terms of getting returns back. I have a segment that I like to call the Vern Rapp Minute. Vern Rapp, I'm sure you're aware, was a manager for the St. Louis Cardinals, and I believe he was a catcher for the Cardinals. I had his 1978 card that I needed signed, and I sent it out, and then the next day I realized he passed away. So my condolences to the Rapp family. I'm not actually sure when he passed away, but I was highly embarrassed to send out a card to someone who had passed away. So I figured I'd go over a list of some of the people from sports and celebrities that had recently passed, so you can experience the same faux pas that I encountered. So here is our Vern Rapp Minute. with all due respect, the following people have passed away recently. So Penny Marshall, who was an actress and famous for Laverne and Shirley, just recently passed. I'm sure you heard on that on the news. Bruce Kiesen, I found out, had passed away from cancer recently. He is in the 1978 set, so I'm sad to hear about that. He was a pitcher for the Pirates and the Angels. Mean Gene Oakland, who was the announcer for the WWE back in the 80s, early 80s, and into the 90s, he just passed away. William McCaffrey, the great giant, passed away. He was 80. Red Shandies, who was, of course, famous. He played on the 46 Cardinal team that won the World Series as well. He was a manager for the Cardinals for a while. He passed away at 95. This one I was really sad to see. He was one of my favorites when he played back in the 70s, famous for his big afro. And he was a pretty good player in his day. Oscar Gamble, he passed away. He was 68. Davey Nelson, who was a coach for the Brewers and an all-star infielder, passed away at 73. Rusty Staub, LeRon Orange, who was a star for the Expos and the Mets. He passed away. He was 73. Jim Taylor, who was a running back for the Green Bay Packers and played in the first and second Super Bowls, recently passed away. And Stan Mikita, who played for the Chicago Blackhawks and played along with Bobby Hall and some of those great teams in the 60s and early 70s. He was 78. So that was a list of some of the people that passed away. Sadly, they're no longer around. Some of these people were friendly to the industry, and they will be missed. Lastly, I have kind of an oops segment that I have to call. We'll just call it an oops. I want to pass a mistake that I made personally. Yeah, we're all human, and this was a big oops, and I got called out for it. So I sent John Matlock, who is the pitcher for the New York Mets, and I sent him an autograph request, and I spelt his name J-O-H-N. And that was a huge faux pas. I know that you're always supposed to get guys' names spelled right. Well, John called me out on it. He sent me a card back. Thankfully, thank you, Mr. Matlock. He is very, very much a friend of the industry. He's always signing his name everywhere. But he did send out a little note that he circled his name, and I said I was an avid fan, which I was and am, and that I probably should have known that his name did not have an H in it. So I apologize, Mr. Matlock. Eating crow on that one. That was an oops on my part. So that won't happen again. We will try to do better. So that wraps up my portion of the podcast. And for our final segment, I had the pleasure of interviewing Rich Mueller, who is the editor of SportsCollectorsDaily.com. I hope you enjoyed the interview.
Joining us today on the TTM Cast Hotline is Rich Mueller, who is editor from SportsCollectorsDaily.com. Rich, why don't you tell us a little about SportsCollectorsDaily.com and some of the things that you guys feature?
Well, the site launched back in 2006, and we've kind of evolved a little bit over the years, but generally it's just it's a daily digest of kind of everything that goes on in the hobby. We don't specialize in any one particular area. We cover everything from the major auctions to the new card releases to finds that happen. Of course, everybody wants to read about the next great find and industry news, things that happen with the various companies. So it's kind of no matter what element of the hobby you're in, that's, we kind of try to have something for your interest. And so a lot of different people read us, whether they're, like I said, within the big money auctions, or whether they're just guys that collect modern cards or, vintage cards, or just kind of on the periphery of the industry and, the various sports leagues. We have a lot of people, in those areas that deal with the trading card licenses and stuff like that, that watch or read the site and kind of watch out for what's happening. So kind of a little bit of everything. And, luckily over the 12 years, we've managed to develop a pretty good following, and it's been a lot of fun for me. I was a sports anchor for a long time and a reporter on television, but always been a collector, and kind of just sort of gravitated toward this as filling a need in the hobby, and it's really been a lot of fun to see it grow and develop.
One of the things that I love about your site is how you're tied in with eBay, and that you can go on and find out what's hot on eBay and also the bargain corner.
Yeah, we are an eBay affiliate partner, but you know, the way we've kind of seen it grow is that people really do like those listings because they change regularly. You can kind of go into seeing, you know, what's hot on eBay. The categories that we have there, baseball, football, basketball cards, and all the different, you know, vintage sports memorabilia and things like that. And people can see instantly what players are hot. Obviously, you know, Luka Doncic, the NBA rookie, is making a big splash now, and he's all over the list of the most watched basketball cards. You know, the football rookies are really hot, but then you also have the really popular vintage baseball cards, like Anytime a 52. Mickey Mantle comes up for auction, you see that, or some of the really rare cards that wind up going through there too show up on the hot list, and you can kind of keep track of what's happening that way. And then we've also got it broken down, like you said, with that little bargain corner section, which is kind of need to try and evolve that a little more because it's been really popular, where we, you know, kind of feature lists of some of the things that are you can own for a small investment, you know, trading card boxes that you can own for less than $20, sets you can own for less than $10, Mickey Mantle cards for less than $100, because a lot of times people complain when they get back into the hobby for the first time in a long time, or you know, if they've been in the hobby for a while and the budget is not always there, they say, you know, geez, I wish I could afford some stuff. And that's just kind of a little area to showcase that you can buy some really neat cards for not a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a great feature. So what I guys talked to you about, because we are a TTM collector podcast, is you had mentioned that earlier when you were a kid, you were a TTM collector. So could you tell me a little about, you know, your TTM experiences as a younger person?
Yeah, I grew up like a lot of young people collecting autographs, but I didn't live very close to any kind of major league ballparks, and so it was difficult to get a lot of autographs in person. So I did what a lot of people were doing, more people did later on, but some people were already obviously doing this in the late 70s and very early 80s, when I was kind of growing up and becoming a teenager and a young adult. I sent out hundreds of requests through the mail to players past and present. You know, you bought the lists of with their addresses in, and you sent away, and with a self-addressed stamp envelope, and you hope that they responded. And at the time, you know, it's interesting for people that are maybe a little bit younger than me to hear some of these names. But, you know, at the time, the retired Hall of Famers were a lot more accessible. I sent away and got guys like Frankie Fritsch and Charlie Gehringer and Hank Greenberg and, you know, Monty Irvin, Pee Wee Reese, some of those guys, you know, big names. And Will Chamberlain was alive back then. I even got one back from him. But, you know, you sent out, you know, I don't know, I think I usually sent out maybe 10 or 15 a week, depending on how much boring time I had on my hands when I was a kid growing up in the summertime. But most of the responses I got, you know, came back within a relatively short period of time. Guys were pretty regular about answering their fan mail. And that's changed a little bit over time, obviously, as the hobby's grown. I think, you know, you don't have a lot of, you have a lot of guys who aren't maybe necessarily as apt to sign, whereas back in the time when I was doing it, I think, you know, most of the teams that you sent away through, it seemed like over half of the guys typically responded, including a lot of the bigger names, like I mentioned. You know, the ultimate superstars at the time, you know, which, you know, Hank Aaron had just retired, and you had a lot of guys that were extremely popular, and maybe their teams didn't necessarily encourage them to sign. So they were tough, but word kind of got around that not to send to those guys. So, you know, I just look back at some of the things I have, and I'm not really much of an autograph collector anymore, but I do have a lot of the things that I got at the time. And you know, you sent whatever you could, because there weren't a lot of different cards out there. So I have pictures I clipped from magazines that I sent to guys like Jack Nicklaus and Lee Trevino, and I mentioned Wilt Chamberlain, and just turned out to, and Nolan Ryan even, you know, I fold up a cover of Sports Illustrated and send it to him. So a lot of different things, and you know, we weren't really that concerned with the value at the time. It was really kind of a pure thing. You know, you were just collecting for the heck of it, and trying to build a good collection, because at the time, you know, most of the autographs weren't really worth that much. You know, some of them had some value, of course, but that wasn't the motivating factor behind it. So it was really kind of a fun time, and I really treasure those, you know, memories of you know, going to the post office and picking up our mail and seeing if there was if I got a response back. I remember real quick, Frankie Fritsch actually wrote his return address on the envelope, so I saved the envelope and along with that, and there were a couple other guys that did that too. That you know, they were thrilled to hear from collectors, especially young people. You know, I hand wrote my requests, and my writing probably wasn't all that great at the age of 11 or 12, but you know, they loved seeing those things, and they loved. Yeah, I tried to personalize each one, and you could tell that they really appreciated that touch because of what they sent back to me.
Yeah, it sounds like you and I are about the same age group. I actually collected when I was a kid in the late 70s, early 80s as well. And I had I did all my handwriting, handwritten mail, letters to these guys with the sometimes a self-addressed envelope, sometimes not. I actually I remember I invited Mickey Mantle over for dinner. and he sent me back an autographed 1958 All-Star card. So it was
wow.
Out of the blue. So it was a different time, but I just got back into TTM collecting about a year ago, and it's certainly a lot more organized and easier to get addresses, and the computer makes life a lot easier in some instances, but you still get that thrill of when the mail comes.
Yeah.
Who did I get today? So.
Yeah. And they usually don't put their, it was pretty rare for them to put their return addresses on. So you never really quite knew until you actually opened the envelope what was inside. The only negative thing I had, and this is kind of embarrassing, but I got back I sent to Willie Mays, and I got back the picture that I had clipped from the magazine and a baseball card. It was one of the 1967 Topps Leaders cards, I think I sent, and I think there was a 72 Topps card as well that I sent. And I got them back, and I was thrilled. They were really beautiful autographs, and one of them was a picture that was from, I think it was Leo Durocher's Hall of Fame election. There was an article in the newspaper and a picture of he and Willie Mays standing in the dugout with the New York Giants in the 50s. And I thought, wow, that's really cool. I wonder if I could get both Leo Durocher and Mays to sign that. And so I sent it away, and I got a really nice, autograph from Leo Durocher, who was, getting up there in age at the time, but still around, still pretty active. And then I sent it to Mays, and I got it back, beautiful signature, and all the cards came back signed, and I was, thrilled. So I even framed that picture of Mays and Durocher. Well, I recently took three of those items to PSA and had them authenticated, and they came back as secretarial. And you talk about a guy who makes his living in the hobby, why didn't I do a little more research and look? Yeah. And I after I got that back, I looked at some of the other things that I've seen that Mays has signed, and I'm like, boy, that was really stupid. Why did I not do a little research before I paid the fee to see that it was obviously a fake? But you just figure, here's Willie Mays and Leo Durocher, Durocher and Mays were, joined together at the hip in the 50s. And I never would have thought that Willie would have had somebody else sign a beautiful picture of he and his, favorite manager back in the day, together. I thought it was, he would be thrilled to get that, but obviously he never saw it. And so it was.
Right, a little more innocent.
Yeah. So that was just kind of a waste of money on my part, and kind of one item that I've got in a frame that doesn't need to be in a frame. I wish I could erase the Mays signature and just have the Leo Durocher up there.
Thanks for sharing that story with us. Is there anything what do you collect now? I know you're busy with the industry. Is there something that you're into now?
Well, I've always been more of a vintage card guy. It's just something I've always done from the time that I was a teenager and kind of could afford a few of the older cards, and kicked myself for not buying more than I actually did. But I do collect sets, and I've got a pretty good run now, of most of those. I've got some pre-war cards, some neat pieces there, not, in mint condition or anything, but, just some things like that. And I did all the major sports. I didn't do hockey, but I did basketball and football, and along with baseball. So I was kind of, that's sort of a focus of my collection there. And I've also got a pretty good supply of old publications, World Series programs, and some All-Star Game programs, and grew up a Green Bay Packers fan, so I've got all the Packer yearbooks back to 1960, and heard my family always talked about the Milwaukee Braves, and even though I was too young to ever remember seeing the and play. I kind of developed a fascination for that period of time that they were there, and so I've got all the Braves yearbooks. I've got a run of Heartland statues, all the Heartland statues, and so that's kind of the bulk of it. I'm in kind of a good bad position here. I've got my office, which is obviously full of my stuff, but it's not real large, and so I've kind of gotten to the point where I can't fit anything else in. So I've kind of had to limit my my additions to the collection here lately. I've got a nice 1964 Topps Giants uncut sheet that I just bought not too long ago, but it's literally sitting up against the bookshelf, and I have no place to put it. So it's nice to have it, but it looks kind of junky just sitting on the floor.
Yeah, my wife glares at me every time I bring something new into the car. We had that same problem. I was wondering, just as your position as editor of Sports Collectors Daily, have you had a chance to meet many athletes and talk about collecting? And
yeah, we really haven't done a lot of that. I mean, I have done some, but people kind of come to us for sports collecting news, not necessarily for, you know, interviews with athletes. You know, I kind of leave that to the major networks and TV affiliates there and newspapers that are covering them. But, you know, I've met some guys. It's kind of funny. I remember when I worked in television and Mickey Mantle came around to do an autograph signing. This was in Milwaukee, probably, I think, 1987 would have been the year. And he came in for that and thought it would be really cool to get an interview with him. And we got there, and he was coming up to the stage to sign and said, "Mickey, you got a couple of minutes to you know, talk with us, and it won't take too long." And he kind of frowned a little bit, and he turned to his handlers that were with him and said, "This is extra." So, but credit to Mickey, he did stop for a few minutes and talk with us, so that was good. But you kind of get to see a different side of those guys with sometimes.
That must have been a thrill to talk to him one-on-one.
Yeah, I was, you know, at the time you don't think of it because you think he's going to be around forever. And obviously, you know, 8 years later, he was gone. So it's nice to be able to remember that and just, you know, kind of an icon, not only in baseball, but in the hobby as well. So it was kind of, you know, he meant so much to so many people growing up who watched him play. And then he means so much to the industry now. So it was neat to be able to at least have a very brief one-on-one interaction with him.
Sure. Well, we're talking with Rich Mueller, who is the editor of SportsCollectorsDaily.com, a fantastic site. I recommend it and to all collectors to go visit and check it out. Rich, just talking more of something about the site, what were some of the most popular stories that you ran last year?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The fines, of course, we had a bunch of big fines last year. When I say fines, I mean cards that are obviously, you know, tucked away that nobody knew about. Maybe the person that had them knew they were probably worth a lot of money, but the hobby as a whole didn't know about them. And so we had a couple of really phenomenal finds of 1952 Topps cards last year. One, you know, multiple Mantle cards and high grade and wound up selling for a lot of money. So those types of stories are always really, really popular. You know, and we had a bunch of those last year. We also have, you know, anytime there's kind of big industry news, a lot of people now know obviously to come to us to find it, and because we do publish every day, and so those types of things. And then, you know, at any time, unfortunately, there's, you know, still some fraud and some crime and things like that happen in on the local level too, and those types of stories are popular too. People want to read about you know, what the latest cases there. We had a situation where there were some fake signed T206s that have popped up in the hobby. That was kind of a big deal. But those are kind of the main things that people really, really kind of gravitate toward, or at least have in the last year or so.
Do you have a favorite story of yours that you...
Wow. You know, I have such a terrible memory. I look through stories now sometimes that I'll see online and think, wow, that looks really interesting, and I'll open it up, and it's like hey, that's one of ours that we did 10 years ago that I've totally forgotten about. But, you know, we've done so many different things. I think our, you know, some of the features that we've done on collectors. But I think maybe the thing that really appealed to me, the story, and again, it goes back to a find that a couple of years ago, when this family that lived in Tennessee and had been part of the, I guess they were a candy wholesaler, and the descendant of whoever was in that business called Mile High Card Company and said, you know, we've got these boxes sitting here, and they didn't believe them that they were, you know, they were back from the 50s and 60s. And, of course, they went out there, and the rest is history. You know, they were authentic, you know, full and very close to full boxes of cards, and we had a just a phenomenal series of auctions that and those boxes sold for obviously huge amounts of money. There was a, you know, Bowman baseball packs and that were just, you know, never before seen. There's literally never been a partial box or of Bowman baseball cards from 1948 that's hit the market. But there were 265 Topps football boxes, of course, wow, with the Namath rookies inside, and just an amazing run of stuff that nobody knew existed. And so that was just really fun because it played out over the course of several months as the auction company sold the first wave, and then the guy called back and said, hey, I've got some more I found as I was digging through the remnants of this house that had been in the family, and they were clearing it out, and they found more. And so then we had another big wave of sports and some non-sports valuable boxes that it's just really cool to see that stuff survive all that time and then come into the hobby, even if none of us mortals can afford it.
Yeah, I don't know if I could have controlled myself. I would have been just starting to rip open
packs. Oh, yeah, yeah. And yeah, the unopened market is so hot right now with, you know, anything except maybe the junk wax there, and even some of that's starting to move a little bit now. But, yeah, it's I've got a box here with a few unopened packs in it, and luckily I keep it out of sight because it's pretty tempting when you get those out and look in there and wonder what's inside.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually been buying those 80s and, you know, late 80s, early 90s boxes, you know, for $10, $15 and just opening them and sending them out to guys to get signed.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a very good idea. A lot of those guys are still around, and you know, probably not, you know, getting a signature on them at least offers a little bit of marketability. I'm seeing, you know, and I think it goes back to the fact that the golden age of our hobby wasn't the 1950s, really. It was the mid to late 80s to early 90s when it just exploded. You know, that was really the golden age of the hobby, and you had so many people collecting, and those younger, the people that were young kids then now are, you know, well into adulthood and have their kids going off to college, and so they're got some additional income, and they've been around a while, and they're looking for something to do, and so they come back to the hobby, and that's the first wave of material that they remember. And so it's been interesting to see what, as they rediscover the hobby, you know, they're disappointed to see their cards that they loved as a kid aren't really worth anything, but at the same time, it's brought them into a larger scope of the hobby. They're going back and they're collecting cards from the 60s and 50s, and they're bringing new life to the stuff that they used to buy because they have all these great memories, and so they're chasing a lot of the high grade junk wax era cards. You know, it's pretty phenomenal to see what some of those go for. The, you know, the Thomas rookies and the Bonds rookies and the Griffey rookies,
yep,
in the PSA 10s and the BGS 10s and that kind of thing. It's so it's, you know, it's far from dead, and you know, it's just, you can buy obviously bulks, boxes and boxes of bulk cards from that area for nothing still, and probably always will be able to, but it's, there's still an element of collecting there, and if that's your era, you know, why not?
Sure. Do you see any new trends coming in collecting for 2019? I know we've gone through the, you know, the premium inserts and the autograph cards inserted, and, you know, the graded cards and the high end cards and that kind of stuff. Do you see anything that might be on the horizon that you're seeing a lot more traction where people are reading articles about, or you're getting information about that, you know, in the coming year?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of what you're seeing now, and we saw this a little bit, Panini has cut back a little bit on their basketball card offerings this year and cutting back on the number of releases, because it's really dizzying to see the number of products that come out in every sport.
I mean, football is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's been that way for a while. That's not really news, but I think you're going to see maybe a little bit of a cutback on the amount of releases that are out, and I think what you are going to see is better quality cards and products and designs. It seems like that's kind of the general direction that things are heading, is that we're going to see maybe a few less products, but some better quality products. And I think that's a good thing. I've seen a lot of really unique cards that are coming out. Even this month, we're going to do a little thing here tonight about the new release calendar that we put out every few weeks in conjunction with the Break Exchange. And there's some really interesting cards that are going to come out of some of these products this month. One is just it's a booklet card, but the picture on the card is the guy holding up his jersey. This is an NFL product, and so you got these rookies holding up their jerseys on draft day, along with a swatch of that jersey and an autograph. So that's kind of a unique looking card.
Yeah.
I was pretty impressed by that, and so I just kind of think that's maybe the general direction. I mean, who knows? But I think that's kind of the feeling I'm getting, is that you're going to see people are demanding a little bit better product now, because the prices are going up. You know, Topps increased the prices for its cards next year. So I just think you're going to see a little more of an emphasis on longer term, you know, products that kind of hold up better over time. I hope, anyway, because that's really what you don't want to price people out of the market. But at the same time, if they are going to spend the money, you know, you want to make sure that it's a product that has some staying power.
Right, to give them a quality product.
Yeah.
So I got one last question, and then I'll let you go. I appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us today. What's your feeling on the future of the sports collector hobby and really baseball cards and cards itself, where less and less kids seem to be, younger kids are collecting cards and buying packs, and you can't go into a grocery store or a pharmacy like you could when we were kids and pick up a pack of cards for a dime or 15 cents.
That's kind of the $64,000 question. I don't know that anybody can answer it, because we're kind of starting to enter that era here. Maybe not now, or maybe not 5 years from now, but 10, 15 years from now, you're going to have a generation that comes to adulthood largely never having much of an interest in cards. For the reasons that you mentioned, it's a digital era now, and I'm saying when I grew up, if there had been the video games and stuff that's available today, I don't know that I would have collected cards, It was a different time, that was the entertainment, and it's just the product has changed. It's no longer bubblegum cards, it's just cards. But, I think that's really going to be interesting, and it's going to be a really important time. I think the vintage market will probably sustain itself, because those are really antiques, and no matter, even if you didn't grow up in the 1920s, somebody that is an adult now still appreciates, a 1920s end table or piece of furniture. A lot of people do, and that end of the market, I think I feel pretty good about. I think long term those will hold up as people still appreciate the history of sports, even if they're not necessarily a traditional collector that grew up buying packs. They still are going to be interested in the hobby. But I worry a little bit about the modern card market, because like you said, there's not as many kids that are collecting. They're still out there. There still are kids that are collecting. And the hobby shops are helping with that, and so are the card companies, kind of trying to do some things to get young people involved. But I don't know, what the landscape will be like 20 years from now. It's really become an adult hobby, but you have to have the young people take an interest, on some level, to keep it vital. So I wish I had the answer, but interesting to see what happens.
Baseball's concerned about that.
Yeah.
I kind of noticed that I was at the Nationals this year in Cleveland, and just looking around, there wasn't a lot of kids, or even kids in their 20s. It was, it was 30 to 60 crowd. I fit right in, but it was.
It's kind of always been that way, though. You know, I remember going to shows in the 80s, and it was still really a dominated a hobby that was dominated by older people. I think you're right, though. I think there maybe aren't quite as many kids that are involved now, but it became an adult hobby really in the 80s and 90s. The kids were still very active. Obviously, that was one of our hot periods, as we just talked about. But I think, there's always going to be an adult presence. But, it's not like kids are going to their and just kind of backing up for a minute. You mentioned the National. I know that the card companies, if you hung around their booths for any length of time, you saw a lot of kids actively involved in what they were doing. So that was good to see, you know, but is the same type of thing happening at card shops all over the country, you know, or is it still really an adult oriented clientele? That's the thing that makes me wonder, you know, what the future will hold. If there's any kids that are coming in, or a lot of times they're coming in with their parents, and their dad collects, to try and grow the hobby from kids who don't have an adult that collects, that's the hard part.
That's the hard part. So. Yeah. All right. Well, I thank you for your time. It's been very interesting to talk to you. You're obviously a passionate collector. It was great to hear about your TTM days as a youngster. Once again, I recommend everyone to go visit sportscollectorsdaily.com. I go there probably four or five times a week. It has fantastic stories, always interesting articles. Things were tied it through with eBay. It's a great site. So, again, Rich, thank you very much for your time. I truly appreciate it.
Jeff, my pleasure, and appreciate your comments and compliments, and good luck with the podcast. I think it's a really interesting part of the hobby, and I think you'll have a pretty good audience for it as people discover it. So I'll be listening.
All right. Thank you very much.
That wraps up our first podcast. I'd like to thank Rich Mueller, editor for SportsCollectorsDaily.com, for joining us on the TTM Cast Hotline. I'd like to thank you for hanging in there with us till the very end. If you have any suggestions or comments, feel free to email me at ttmcast@yahoo.com. You can find me on Instagram at ttmcast, or you can find me at my website at www.ttmcast.com. I hope you'll join us next Tuesday for Season 1, Episode 2. Until then, have a good week and many happy returns.